Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
News Radio 1020 KDKA, John McIntyre in for Rob Pratt. Many of us are getting older. As they say, I'm no spring chicken myself. And the older you get, it's a good idea to consult attorneys because there's a lot of complicated legal issues that can arise the older you get. And that's why law firms like Zachariah Brown exist. And that's why we have in the studio with us Carl Zachariah and Colleen Bratkovich of Zachariah Brown. Welcome, you guys.
Thank you, John.
Good evening.
Yeah, we're with Zachariah Brown. We have three offices in Western Pennsylvania, one in McKeesport, Versailles-Borough area, another one in McMurray, Peters Township at Donaldson's Crossroad, and another one, which is expanding greatly, in Wexford, PA. And we're PittsburghElderLaw.com, and we practice elder law. So Colleen and I were talking tonight about the topic for this show. And we have one topic we want to start talking about a little bit because it was in today's paper. And then we want to move on to like a potpourri. We would love to have you all call in any questions you might have. 866-391-1020. I've heard it a million times. I know the number. And the dollar bank.
You don't even need to read it off the card.
And the dollar bank instant access line as well. So if you have questions, please call us. We have a lot of things to talk about in the second part, but I want to talk about this digital accounts business. What exactly are we talking about?
So what Carl's referring to is an article in Post Gazette Online today that was discussing it's discussing some legislature that's in our state right now to address the problem that fiduciaries, so executors, powers of attorney, the problems that they're having accessing digital accounts of their loved ones. That can be anything. That can be from online brokerage accounts or Facebook or even accessing the online bank statements of someone. Executors especially are having a lot of trouble accessing those accounts when somebody has passed away. As far as a power of attorney, an agent under the power of attorney is concerned, as long as the document gives the scope of the authority that includes access to those online or digital accounts, that agent should have been able to access those. And our powers of attorney absolutely do, and they have for years.
We've included that provision to access and work with online digital accounts and assets for about 4 or 5 years now. But imagine, if you will, if your loved one you find out has an account, an online account with a bank that's in auto payout mode. It's paying money for some life insurance, for some utility, for whatever it might be, and you need to get in there and stop that. I suppose you could try to go to the bank and stop payment or close the account, but it'd be a lot better and a lot easier to just to do it online with access to the account. And so these powers of attorney authorize those types of things. There's also a lot of banks nowadays and financial organizations and companies. Everything's online. E-Trade. I'm not sure there's an E-Trade store around or location around. Or Amazon. How do you actually contact Amazon and get these things changed?
Well, what if you have Subscribe and Save through Amazon and you have your groceries being sent to you on a regular schedule? Somebody needs to get in there and stop that.
Yeah, and frankly, that's what makes elder law attorneys different and, frankly, more modern. Sounds kind of counterintuitive there, I guess. But we are. And everything that we do is designed to address the needs of today rather than what they were 20, 30 years ago, which did not include items like online accounts, did not include items like the needs for long-term care. That's our specialty. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm. And, we're trying to help families who are, planning for maybe the possibility of somebody needing long-term care down the line, or somebody who's currently in need of long-term care, a family who has recently lost a loved one, all of those really emotional, stressful life situations. And, just to make matters worse, not having the appropriate documentation to be able to do what you need to do just makes it that much more difficult.
Yes.
You know, and you know, it's so difficult, even if you have the documents that you need, but let alone, you know, things like this where we're finding that different, you know, online accounts or digital accounts only, that individuals are not getting the access they need to be able to redeem assets. And I think, you know, the legislation speaks to sometimes people are just kind of doing it on their own, whether they have the authority to do so or not. And, you know, some of these agencies, you know, after the fact are finding out, or the, you know, banks finding out after the fact that the person has been passed away and transactions were occurring, you know, after their date of death by somebody who did not have the authority to do so, that could be a real problem for them.
Yeah. And a lot of people are unaware that if you go online and you access somebody else's account, if you go to their computer or just go to their account, enter their username and password, it's actually a violation of federal law. It's called the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. And you have to have specific written authorization to access somebody's online, somebody else's computer, someone's online account. Well, this is that written authorization that you need. It's built into our powers of attorney. So mm-hmm. I really don't know of anybody who's ever been charged or arrested for that, but it becomes an issue.
Yeah. Carl, I was just going to say, I think that, you know, a lot of families issue or, you know, way that they deal with that is that there's just some master notebook somewhere in the house that has everybody's usernames and passwords. But, you know, those, a lot of places you have to update your password every 90 days and or every 60 days. People are changing passwords, changing usernames. So how accurate that document would be with all of those passwords. And as Carl said, technically that's illegal to do it anyway.
Yeah. And which brings to another point, that's something else that people should be putting into their estate planning, and that is that special book that you mentioned. There should be a place, not online, but some place on paper somewhere that lists what are all of your online accounts, what are the usernames, and what are the passwords, so that your loved ones can get access to them, because you never know when someone might get sick or get an auto accident or something. It's good to have all of those things available. And we were talking to John earlier. You know, just it dawned on me that another issue might be that some people have all of their photos and all their documents, everything, all this history about the family online, stored in iCloud or something like that. And the family wants to get those. Those are memories that they want to keep. Going to be hard to get unless you have some methodology for getting them. So
I'm hiring you guys as soon as I run into any of these problems. I can guarantee you that.
You have to get a little older, John, but no,
thank you for saying that. We're with Carl Zachariah and Colleen Bratkovich of Zachariah Brown. You can check them out on their website, pittsburghelderlaw.com. You're welcome to call in with any elder law questions at 866-391-1020 or email us on the Dollar Bank Instant Access at kdkradio.com. Back with more of Pittsburgh Works in a moment. News Radio 1020 KDKA. We're talking legal issues involving older folks, Pittsburgh elder law, with Carl Zachariah and Colleen Bratkovich of Zachariah Brown. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, John.
Let's go to Nancy.
Let's do. Nancy in South Park. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, everyone. How are you this evening?
Great, Nancy. How are you?
I'm doing great. My question's pretty simple. I am the power of attorney and executor for my stepmother, and dementia is taking over. And she's got a small nest egg and her house. Those are her bigger assets that I certainly want to protect for her care. My question is this. If I need to take care of her, how do I use her account to pay for everything? Should I put my name on her checking account now? I've heard and read different opinions on this.
Well, let me ask you this. Whenever she passes away, who is her or are her heirs?
It would be me and her living children. There's two, three, maybe? Yeah. That and again, it's me as her stepdaughter. I'm the executor. I'm the one that already signed the papers, and I've already signed the papers as power of attorney.
Okay. And these accounts you're talking about, these nest eggs, are they bank accounts or are they?
Yes. Just straight bank accounts.
They're all bank accounts.
Not investments. Yeah, okay. They're not investments.
There could be a problem sometime with investment accounts. You put your name on, you're paying capital gains taxes when you sell them that you were unaware of, and that's why I was asking that question.
Sure.
Well, I think that if you have a good rapport and relationship with the other children, that it would not be harmful at all to put your name on that account, provided that they all agree. And then when you're The lady does.
Oh, they're
pass.
Not going to agree. They're not going to agree.
Oh.
That could be that could be trickier. Because putting your name on that account, Nancy, gives actually you the right. You're going to inherit that account. So by operation of law, when your stepmother passes away, you are the sole inheritor of that account. It doesn't go through her will. So that if there's not a good family dynamic, that actually could really cause you some problems. You can be the power of attorney and not be an owner on the account, not have your name on the account. Once that power of attorney is on record with the bank, you'll be able to sign her checks. You'll be able to deposit money, get access to her statements, access to any information that you need. But you will not be an owner on the account.
Okay. What happens after, God forbid, she passes, that I can still use those accounts to pay, keep the utilities on and that sort of thing?
You won't be able to really use the account after she dies until it's converted to an estate account.
As power of attorney, you will
not.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. As power of attorney. It'll have to be converted to an estate account at that point in time, which means a probate estate's opened, you're issued something called a short certificate. You can take that to the bank and be able to access the account again. If your stepmother is kind of just starting into dementia, maybe this is the time to have the conversations with her about whether it would be appropriate to maybe break up her banking assets a little bit. So maybe she keeps a smaller checking account that she could put your name on that does, wouldn't include a whole lot of money, but would give you immediate access to those funds after her death, leaving the bulk of it to be distributed under her will.
That might
be an option.
And money that she has, I certainly wanted to go into the estate to be distributed properly. Mm-hmm. My biggest thing is to make sure, how do I draw from those funds to pay any needed expenses, because I certainly cannot afford any of those expenses.
Well, I tell you, Nancy, that what I would strongly recommend at this point, or sometime in the near future, you should discuss with her and visit your family funeral home and get a prepaid funeral set up now. Fund it.
That has been done.
Okay, so that's already funded. So when she passes, there's usually money set aside in that account, not just for the funeral, but there's also an interment, the person that digs the grave, for the wake and the floors and any other expenses that there might be. So make sure that that is sufficiently funded. In Allegheny County, you're permitted by Medicaid rules to have up to $20,000 in that fund.
Oh, okay.
Washington and some other counties are closer to the $15,000 or $16,000 range. So it might make sense to make sure that you have a sufficient amount in that account, not just enough for the funeral, but for all the other incidentals that accompany that.
Okay.
So that when she does pass, those bills are already covered. It does not take long to get somebody sworn in as the executor of the will and get those forms that Colleen was referencing access the funds.
So usually utility bills and things like that, they can wait a few weeks. And, there shouldn't really be much reason that you can't get the estate open within a few weeks. You need to have death certificates, so you can't do it immediately after the person passes away. But usually within, a week or so of getting the death certificates, you should be able to get that all taken care of. So, you shouldn't really need to access that money immediately.
Okay, very good. Okay. You've answered my questions, and I enjoyed the show. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for listening.
Thanks for calling, Nancy. We have open lines, 866-391-1020. We'd love to spend the rest of our time here just answering your questions. But in lieu of that, and until then, Colleen and I were talking at the break about war stories. You want to start with yours?
War stories are the experiences that we have, our clients that we meet with that, just when you hear their story, you sometimes just can't even believe it. Or, the advice that they got was so bad, or the, experience that they had was just, you just wouldn't believe it. But oftentimes it comes from advice people are getting elsewhere. So, we're elder law attorneys. We do this for a living. We understand the rules. We understand the laws. We know the way that it works. But yet many people, when seeking out advice, seek out advice from Joe at the bar or Mary at the beauty shop, and they're more likely to listen to those individuals than maybe to us sometimes. But, I think, a lot of families get trapped when they have this, interaction with the nursing home, and they have this quasi-authority about Medicaid. And, they do Medicaid applications there. They do Medicaid applications in the nursing home. nursing home. They must really know what they're doing. And they maybe process a lot of applications, but I don't know that they know law. You know, they don't know the rules. They don't know the exceptions. And they can sometimes lead people down a path that from which, and Carl has a story, there's really little return. But, you know, the nursing homes, I hope that they aren't intentionally giving bad advice, but I think that they don't know. You know?
Absolutely. And we can talk more about that when we come back from the bottom of the hour news. Do you recommend either Joe or Mary?
Both bad. Okay. They're both just bad advice.
News Radio 1020 KDK. Okay. And here's a couple of people working hard for you on Pittsburgh Works, Carl Zachariah and Colleen Bratkovich of PittsburghElderLaw.com, better known as the law firm of Zachariah Brown, although you can check them out at PittsburghElderLaw.com. So before we went to break, you were saying some interesting things.
Carl has a war story.
We have lots of war stories. But the most recent one that comes to mind was from today, of course. And it was a gentleman who was telling me about his problems. And his father had applied for Medicaid many years ago. His mother was alive at the point, and they went through the whole Medicaid application. He said there was very little guidance, and no one informed him of anything. But, you know, frankly, that's the way the system is. It's nobody's job to help you do the Medicaid application, except for, of course, lawyers like us that you might hire to help you do so. Turns out there was a transfer of the house and some other assets 58 months before they put that Medicaid application. Now, that's 2 months shy of the five-year look back. If they had waited for 2 months to apply, there would have been no penalty at all. They didn't, because they didn't know any better and nobody guided them otherwise, and they ended up selling the house and losing over $150,000 on top of the house. It was nearly $300,000. They lost everything. Never should have happened. And I can't blame anybody except for maybe him, because he didn't seek out any guidance. A lot of people don't. I want you all to know that we are here to guide you. And do lawyers charge? Yes, we do. Of course we charge. But, you know, the money we charge costs you nothing more. By that, I mean that the money that you pay us simply helps you get eligible for Medicaid sooner. It's money that you would otherwise pay to the nursing home. So, it doesn't cost you anything more. You can, you know, go it alone and frankly, I don't know how some people do it. Just the stress I see our clients go through sometimes. I said, look, don't worry. This happens all the time. And they get nervous, but it always works out. I knock on wood, I can't tell you the last case. We didn't win. I mean, if there's a problem, we know what the problem is up front. We identify it up front. We go through our triage or all the questions about the case, looking for problems, and we know what they are up front.
And, you know, there's so many exceptions too. You know, everybody's circumstances are different. There are so many exceptions under the law that allow for us to protect and preserve somebody's life savings. And, you know, because they are maybe exceptions to the laws or exceptions to the rules, you know, it's not as widespread as maybe everybody thinks. Well, the first thing that happens when you go to the nursing home is the nursing home takes your house, which isn't really true. But everybody thinks that. Everybody has heard that. But at the same time, when we do this type of planning, we know that, hey, you qualify for X, Y, or Z exception, or we can protect the house for this reason, or you know, we can make a plan to protect the equity and net worth of the home. But sometimes maybe the nursing home doesn't understand that exception. You know, that I ran into this recently. I have an exception for, or there's an exception under the law if you have a sibling with an equity interest in the home at the time that you go into the nursing home. That house can be transferred and it's not considered to be a gift. And that was the exception that we utilized to transfer the home over to his brother who lived in the home with him when the individual was going to the nursing home. And that nursing home told him up and down and left and right, you should have never done that. You're going to cause yourself a penalty. You're not going to get payment for nursing home care for years because of that. Why would you do something like that? And obviously the client gets nervous, as they always do, and come back at, you know, what did you make me do? And why did we do this? And they're telling me that it isn't going to work out. But you know what? It did. They got approved. There was no penalty for the transfer of the house because it was an actual exception, that something we were permitted to do by law. And, had, you know, that individual not sought out our help and had he just gone with what the nursing home told him, he would have lost his place to live because when his brother died, they were going to have to potentially sell the house to, you know, be able to, you know, pay back for state recovery purposes.
Because what is it the lawyers do? We read the rule book and we know what the rules are. And there's a rule there that says if there's a sibling of the applicant with an equity and ownership interest in the house, it's fine to transfer the entire value of that house to that sibling. It causes no penalty whatsoever. Nobody else knew that. You wouldn't know that unless you read the regs, the rules, if you will. And that's what we do. You know, as part of the process, we don't have the time to sit and fight a nursing home over a large bill with a family that frankly can't afford to pay it. What we do is I've broken it down. I call it a case triage. For lack of a better word, it's sort of like making sure that everything's addressed. And I break it down into three separate issues. And that first section is called opportunities. And opportunities are special exceptions to the law that are outside of the five-year look-back, such as if there is a child of the Medicaid applicant who lives in the Medicaid applicant's home and has for more than 2 years, and that is, in fact, their home too, on most occasions, it's okay to give that house to that child despite the five-year look-back. There's special rules for disabled children. There's special rules for trusts for disabled individuals. There's special rules for disabled children. There's a lot of special exceptions. There's a special rule for jointly owned property where both signatures are required to transfer the property. If the other one doesn't consent, it's not available. Oh, that's section one. That's opportunities. The second section is required spend down. And then I go through a list of things that you don't want to get bit for later on. We're going to pay these from your spend down now. For example, or there's some debts. Is there a credit card debt? Is there a vehicle payments that need to be made? Does the applicant have an IRA? There's going to be taxes on that. You just liquidate the IRA and don't pay those taxes, someone's going to be in trouble next year when the tax bill comes around. Do they have a funeral? Do they owe the nursing home presently? Do they owe anybody else anything? We go through that. That's the second section. That's required spend out. And the third section is what I call just common issues. And these are things that come up in most Medicaid applications. Were there any prior gifts? Did the person pay for something that you may not consider a gift? Like, did they pay for the wedding for their granddaughter, for example, those sorts of things. We cover that. Did they have caregivers that they paid cash to? That's a problem in a Medicaid application. Without anything in writing, it looks like it was a gift. Did they take large amounts of cash out in the past 5 years? Where did all that cash go? There's about probably about 20 questions altogether that we ask. We call case triage, and these questions are asked to address the problems, because if there are prior gifts and before the person has spent down all their money, most of the time we can fix them without having to give the money back, particularly when the person doesn't have the money to give back.
And I think as part of this triage too, we always say, especially if you are a married couple, because I mean, that's a huge one right there, is do you have a spouse in the community, or do you have a spouse that has needs of their own? What is their income? What are their costs? Do they live in a personal care or assisted living? Do they have rent to pay? Do they still work and have wages? All of those things go into account when trying to determine, you know, what things that you qualify for, not things, but what exceptions you might qualify for, or what additional benefits you may have over somebody else to be able to protect and preserve assets.
Yeah. This is not one client. This is many clients. They said, oh, well, over the past, I went through and yeah, there was these cash withdrawals were taken out. Dad has dementia. We have no idea what they went to. They didn't go to any of the kids. We don't really know, but there was over $120,000 taken out over this past 4 year period as dad developed his dementia. And they came to us and they were very worried. They said, am I going to go to jail? Am I going to get sued? And we fixed it. We know how to do it. I can't share it on the radio, but we know how to do it. There are methods that we use to cure gifts, and they work well. The one I can tell you about, which is frankly very little known, but maybe should be, this one case I've had recently was a gentleman whose father had paid for something for his sister, for another child. And they were applying for Medicaid, that was a couple years ago, and they were applying for Medicaid because about a year after the father had given the sister some money, He had a sudden stroke, and he was in the nursing home now because of the effects of that stroke. And, you know, they had no money to fix the cure, as or to cure the prior gift, as I said. But we took the approach, which is, if there is money that's gifted away for purposes other than to get Medicaid, then you were to ignore them. They'd be left alone. And you can never do that in a dementia case. But when there's a sudden onset of an illness, like a stroke, it comes out of nowhere and hits somebody, that's not in contemplation of Medicaid. And that's a little known exception to the gifting rule, which we use pretty often. It's a great defense.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you like what you're hearing tonight, make sure you check out our website, PittsburghElderLaw.com. We have lots of great information on our website. We have links to all of our upcoming seminars. You know, we're out in the community all the time talking about these things. So check out our website. We have all of our events coming up. You know, I think Carl is something just this week that he's going to be out there, and we try to get out in the community as much as we can to talk about these things.
Yeah.
Check them out at PittsburghElderLaw.com. More of a conversation with Carl Zachariah and Colleen Bratkovich in a moment. You're welcome to phone in with any question at 866-391-1020, or you can send us an email at kdkradio.com. Use the Dollar Bank Instant Access. Back in a moment with Pittsburgh Works, News Radio 1020, KDKA. Our final segment on Pittsburgh Works with Carl Zachariah and Colleen Bratkovich from PittsburghElderLaw.com and the law firm of Zachariah Brown. And we have a call, and that is Sue in West Mifflin. Hi, Sue.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, Sue.
I have a question. Before my mom passed away, I was put on the title of her home. And then she passed, so she and I are the only ones on the title. And I'm wondering if I should place my husband on the title of the house, just in case something would happen to me and I would need to be going to a long-term care facility or something like that.
Do you live there?
I do live there, and he lives there with me.
Okay. Just a couple of issues here I want to just bring you aware of. I give one to call in, but, you know, when she passed away, you actually owe inheritance taxes on half the value of that house. Now, nobody's going to tell you that, and you won't know about it until sometime down the road when you go to sell it, and the buyer's bank does a title check that goes back in time to see how you acquired title. And they say, oh, but she acquired title as a joint owner. They didn't pay the inheritance taxes. That's going to be a possible issue with title. At that point in time, you have to pay inheritance taxes on half of it. That's something that you should look into getting taken care of.
Would that be half of the current value or half of the value when my mom passed?
The value when she passed.
Okay.
The fair market value as of that date.
Yeah, no, I was not aware of that.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people weren't.
Surprise.
And they don't find out until down the road and they go to sell it. What do you mean? What's this interest for? What are these penalties for? Yeah, man, that's where it happens. You want to take the other part?
Oh.
Yeah. Well, the one thing, you know, if it's your primary residence, I think there's probably no harm in adding your husband to the deed. But if somebody does require long-term care, I just wanted to bring it up that you can transfer ownership in your home to your spouse at any time. There's no 5-year look back between spouses. So even in the event that somebody, you know, went to the nursing home, that house could be transferred. Now, things you should be concerned about outside of the nursing home arena, if something happens and you pass away owning or owing any debts, I mean, you know, car loans or credit cards or medical bills or any other kind of debts, they need to be satisfied from your assets. And if you and your husband don't own the home jointly, then that house doesn't pass to your husband. It passes through your estate, and it's subject to paying back your creditors first. So that's something that you may want to be, you know, concerned about. If you're not going to add your husband, I would say just make sure that you absolutely have power of attorney, that, you know, somebody, if whether it be your husband or somebody else is the agent for you by power of attorney, so that if something sudden would happen and that house would need to be transferred, somebody has the authority to transfer title on the home. Because as spouses, we don't have any inherent right to, you know, sign away interests for our spouse or have access to information or make decisions for them. You have to have that document in place. So your husband could find himself in a sticky situation without a place to live if, you know, some of those things aren't taken care of.
Okay. And so if we would add him to the title, would we have to pay those inheritance taxes at that time?
Well, you should pay the inheritance taxes sooner rather than later. You should probably have that looked into right now by any attorney could pretty much do that. Have them look at that. Take care of that now. And you can just go ahead and have him add it onto the deed at the same time.
And how much what's the percentages of inheritance taxes?
Mother to daughter, 4.5%.
4.5%. And how do they determine the cost, the value of the house at that time?
They look at the fair market value that the county has at on that particular year, and they multiply that by 4.5%, divided by 2, since your name was on there as a joint owner.
Okay.
So it's only half taxable.
Thank you for your information.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Yeah, you definitely want to get those things taken care of, because I dealt with a family in the last year where there was 5 owners to the home, and one of them, one by one, passed away, and they never paid inheritance taxes until they got to the last one.
And she brings up a very good point. And so anyone out there who's listening, if you have parents, if you have a loved one, there's any married couple, one has dementia or is getting dementia or is sick or getting sick, and the other one is the caregiver, you should talk to us right away about planning for the possibility that healthier person dies first. Because I have Ricky and Lucy, and Lucy's getting dementia, and Ricky's at home, and he's able to take care of her. If Ricky dies, Lucy's not going to be able to live at home. She'll have to go to a nursing facility, and you could lose everything. We do an estate plan with a will and everything that says, in the event that Ricky should die first, Lucy gets 1/3 of the estate, the rest goes to the children, something along those lines, whatever their desires are. That's critical, because you could still lose everything if you don't do that.
Would Lucy have some splaining to do in that scenario?
It was either Ralph and Alice or Lucy and Ricky.
Yeah, Fred and Wilma. Yeah, yeah. You've got about a minute and 20 seconds, I'd say, to say fascinating things.
Well, okay. Well, fascinating things.
Well, as we said before, check out our website. Make sure you find where we are in the community. Learn why we do what we do and why we do it so well. We were talking about the documents before with having access to online and digital accounts. And we mentioned that we've been doing that. We've been doing that for years. That's, something we're trying to always stay on the foreground of where the law is headed. Because all documents are not created equal. And unfortunately, you're not typically going to know what you need to use the document for until it's time to use it. And at that time, it may be too late to get a new one signed. So.
Yeah. It's our field, it's our specialty, and we've been doing it as longer than anybody in Western Pennsylvania. And we've grown from basically a 1 or 2 man shop to, 20 people now. We have 7 lawyers,
3
20
offices.
People. Yeah, 3 offices. So it's we do right by our clients. We get them approved, and then once they're approved, we make sure that nothing falls apart thereafter. So
lawyers with integrity, who knew? Congratulations on that. Check them out at PittsburghElderLaw.com. Thanks, Carl Zachariah and Colleen Bratkovich, for being here today.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
We will check news after the break. News Radio 1020, KDKA.